Namaskar. Welcome to the third episode of Satya Samvad. Bengal has been a civilizational pillar of Bharat since times immemorial. In the Mahabharata, references to Ang and Vang abound. Hindu Bengali dynasties such as the Pal and Sen attained heights of glory, with Dharmapal even holding an imperial court at Kannauj as Uttarapatha Swamin after installing his vassal there. A third century civilization has been recently found near the surface of Gobardhanpur in Patar Pratima block in Sundarbans. Raghunath Shiromani is another luminary, a leading Indian philosopher and logician hailing from Nabadweep in West Bengal, who elevated Navya Nyaya, the pinnacle of Indian formal logic. However, after the devastating raids by Bakhtiar Khilji, which also led to the destruction of Nalanda, the Bengal Sultanate was established. And thereafter, there was a whole flurry of developments which led to civilizational decline in various different dimensions. With the British Raj, Fort William transforming to Kolkata became a center point of the colonial exercise. However, today West Bengal is still reeling from the archaic endowments of the British Raj, the sway of syndicate politicking and appeasement politics. To discuss this and more, we have with us today, Sri Shishir Bajoria Ji. Shri Shishir Bajoria Ji, born in 1957, is a prominent Indian politician and industrialist. He heads the SK Bajoria Group, overseeing diverse ventures with an annual turnover of $330 million, including specialized refractories and insurance services. He has held influential positions in organizations such as the Europe-India Business Council and chairs the Board of Governors at the India Institute of Management, Shillong. A member of the Bharatiya Janata Party, the BJP, since 2014, Bajoria Ji is actively involved in West Bengal politics, serving on key committees and supporting the Citizenship Amendment Act of 2019. In the 2021 West Bengal Legislative Assembly election, he also served as a convener of the Election Management Committee, highlighting his trusted role within the party. Through his contributions, Bajoria Ji has shaped both industry and political discourse in India, particularly in West Bengal. We welcome you, sir.
Thank you, Mritunya.
So, sir, West Bengal was once a thriving economic powerhouse, particularly with its jute trade, with the data produced by Morris D. Morris showing that Indian mills exported about 7.2 million pounds of jute products compared to just 1.5 million pounds of the British in 1913. This suffered a setback with the partition in 1947, when five mills were closed in Kolkata within a year, decreasing the volume of jute arriving by one third. Even then, the annual compound growth rate in the first decade after independence was 3.31 in the state, which was higher than the All India average of 2.75. From 1948 to 1965, the Durgapur steel plant, the Damodar Valley Core power station, as well as the dairy-based industry came up in Kalyani. Things quickly went downhill in the 1960s when the Congress government in the center levied import tariffs and tried equalization for coal and steel in the mid-1950s, but did little to safeguard the export-oriented industries like jute and tea, which were traditional industries of West Bengal. Ironically, the government in the state at that time was of the Congress as well, going against the popular argument that West Bengal suffered due to the differences of opinion of the central and state governments. Even later, many states like Tamil Nadu, for instance, had non-Congress governments in the state during Congress rule at the center and did better than left-ruled West Bengal. Today, the picture is quite grim when it comes to the economics of Pashchim Bongo. As per the annual report of 2022-23 at the Ministry of Labor and Employment, the highest job seekers across the country were in West Bengal. The periodic labor force survey 2022-23 by the Directorate General of Employment has shown that while 14.5% of people in rural West Bengal are in regular wage or salary earning positions, a massive 49.6% of the workforce is self-employed, while 28.7% are in casual labor. A contractual worker in a jute mill gets as low as rupees 200 per day, much lower than the minimum wage for unskilled workers in West Bengal. And there are thousands of such casual laborers in the state today who are not even on the official records. Even with this significant casual labor force considered, the cumulative unemployment rate for the state of West Bengal stands at 7.1%. As an eminent political leader and industrialist of the state and of the nation, how do you see the story having unfolded and unfolding going forward in the state of Pashchim Bongo?
Well, Mritunjay, it was a, I must say, Greetings on a very well put background note on the state. It's an unfortunate situation as a Bengali living here for three generations. Bengal, West Bengal, whenever earlier, whenever the discussion came, there was a huge argument. West Bengal is number one in India or number two in India. This is where we were. And what is there today? We are still arguing whether number one or two from the bottom. See, it pains me in saying this. Before I come to hard facts, yesterday I was in Mumbai and I went there after a long time. Believe you me, I was thinking, am I in the same country where I live in Bengal, in Kolkata? Didn't appear to be. And we are same country, we are the same people. Where we are and where is Mumbai gone? Now, coming to the points which you have said. See, when earlier days, Bengal was right at the top. In fact, East was on top. West was not there. In the infinite wisdom, the Congress government at the center wanted to bring the two ends of the country at par, which is a very good thing that this imbalance can't be there. East is up and West is low. So instead of bringing West up, they brought East down. And you mentioned about this freight equalization, this industrial licensing. Now, freight equalization forced all the advantages of raw material endowment which East had to be made available to the West at the same cost. But nothing came in return from the West to East at the same cost. Nothing. That was freight equalization. Now, second, at that time, West Bengal, Kolkata Airport, those days Calcutta Airport, was one of the first two busiest airports in the continent of Asia. Where were we then? Where are we now? You see, you mentioned about what happened, about the steel mills that came up, about the Kalyani that came up, the township. But it stood still with Indian Iron, with at Burnpur, with Durgapur Steel, with ASP, things just stood still. The great Ambassador car factory in Srirampur, it just stood still. Jute goods had an unfortunate issue of suffered due to partition. Pre-partition of the country, on the eastern side of Bengal were the jute cultivation, and on the western side were mills. Now, the day the country was partitioned, mills remained here, raw jute went to Bangladesh. So, what will the mills produce with? There was hardly any raw jute here. Of course, it took years for this imbalance to get sorted out. The imbalance to a great extent today is sorted out. But then, in the process, the jute industry also suffered on account of modernization, where I would blame even the jute mill owners and or the jute mill management, let's call it. Now, coming to issues like the whole partition. India got partitioned at two ends, on the west and on the east. But in the west, what happened? The migration that took place two ways. It took place once in one go. Huge number of people got killed. Well, it's very unfortunate, but it ended. In the East, it was always a steady trickle because our Eastern neighbors were very less fortunate. And there was a constant trickle. And then the political parties that came, the left and then Trinamool Congress, ensured that this trickle continued because these were vote banks. I will surprise people if I tell you, we have all heard Shaheen Bagh, which went on for months and months and months out at the outskirts of Delhi. All the people in Shaheen Bagh were from Bangladesh. All, or as high as 90%. So this migration problem is not just in Bengal now. From here, they use this as a launching pad because today there's no employment in Bengal. So they can't remain here. So they use this only as a gateway and then spread all over the country. This is a huge issue for our government to tackle. Now, you mentioned about the Congress being at center and Congress being in the state. Absolutely. For the first 25 years, Bengal was not on the opposite side of the center. It was on the same side. Why did Bengal go down? This is where I tell you, this was the policy of the central government. I can't understand a government which policy is that to balance the two, I will not ensure that the other one, the one who's lagging behind, is uplifted. I'll push the one on top, I'll push that down. That's what they did. I give you some prime examples. When Calcutta, which used to be a political capital, but forget the political capital, long back it shifted to Delhi, which was the economic capital of the country. Why does Reserve Bank of India opens its doors in Bombay when Bombay knew nothing about economics? Why does the first industrial development bank, which was spun out of Reserve Bank, I'm talking of IDBI Bank, IDBI Bank was a division of Reserve Bank. Why did it start in Bombay? Why not in Calcutta? It was the economic capital. Those days, State Bank of India, earlier Imperial Bank of India, which became State Bank of India after independence, was based in Calcutta. Why was it shifted to Bombay? Why was ICICI Bank formed in Bombay? By ICICI Bank was completely government controlled. And what did Government of India give Calcutta? The Industrial Reconstruction Bank. That means we know that all the failures are here. So here you have a bank where all the bad assets will come. My question is, that time both the government, state and center were together. Why did all this happen in Bombay and not in Calcutta when Calcutta was the economic capital? Okay, today, if something new comes up in Bombay, I won't blame it because it is gone. Calcutta has lost its, shall we say, advantage. Those days I would hugely question and I still question it. Now, when the left rule came, see, first of all, we have to divide it in two parts. First, there was a five-year period when it was the United Front government of Ajay Mukherjee. And then that was the period when Naxal movement was at its peak. Huge crime. As a teenager, I won't forget that. You could not move out of your house once dark, forget darkness, once dusk settled. It was that bad. So that is where the first flight of capital took place. See, for any businessman, even if you open a cha dukan, what do you want? Before you look at sales, you want to protect your capital. No? If your capital is not protected, you're not going to be there. So after 5 years, the Congress government came again. There was a period of uncertainty because Article 356 was used thrice. And then from 77, in a non-stop 34-year rule, it was the CPN. Now, here the state went through a roller coaster. But each time the roller coaster was going down and down. Now, while they made a very strong announcement that we will not let the mistakes of the United Front government be repeated, very good announcement. But then what happened? Politicization of workforce happened. Violent trade union activities happened. Very proudly, CPM leaders, ministers, very proudly in a formal meeting, in their speech would say, well, we have to acknowledge that we have contributed one word to the Oxford Dictionary. And the word was gherao. You should be diving for cover in shame, not celebrating this word which came to Oxford Dictionary, gherao. There was quite a few killings of managers. Each time, first they would say, oh, it's bad, but quietly protect the worker. Now, this started rattling the businessmen, the capital. Naturally so. And slowly, slowly, the flight kept on increasing, kept on increasing. Then came a period, 95 to 97, where there was a renewed drive for industry, and left for once came out with a policy which was, we would like to woo industry. It was a welcome policy. I was part of it, where they said, we are not only just going to be industrial friendly, but we will woo industry. Excellent policy. And in just 2 years, West Bengal saw the highest amount of proposals fly, just filling in West Bengal. Then the CPM machinery kicked in, and each one by one by one, all the proposals were scuttled, and we were back to where we were. Well, with my background, you would know I was part of that team. So, I'll use one Bangla term. The communists called themselves the Sarva Harar Party. The people who have lost everything. Well, for Sarvahara's party, there has to be Sarvahara. If there's no Sarvahara, the party won't remain. So people have to remain poor to for this theory, shall we say, Niti to remain. And this is what unfortunately was followed. And the state went again down and down and down. Now, we spoke about various things like cut money. Whatever they did was very refined, was very controlled. This cut money actually started with syndicate. They didn't even call it syndicate. It was, look, these are unemployed people. For survival, they are doing some supply work. We'll deem it a great favor. Why don't you give them the supply contract? After all, you have to buy sand, you have to buy bricks, you have to buy this, you have to buy that. Give them, they are youngsters, youth. You know, what would you do? You would say, okay, after all, there are people, do it. So they started it like this. Slowly, that give these youngsters supply contracts became syndicate. And then this became my right. And Trinamool started from there, and then they kept pushing it up and up and up. Now, where these, going back to the politicization of the workforce, a huge number of mandates were lost. Huge number. Strikes. Then they found that strikes is not so easy to call, because after all, strike has, there are certain do's and don'ts for the trade union to call a strike. So instead of calling a strike, they would call a band. What's the difference? Band is by force, by brute force, you're bringing the city to a standstill. To call a strike and to call a legal strike, not a strike which can be struck down as illegal, the workers have to vote for the strike. What happens if the workers didn't vote for the strike? So they would not take the risk. You have the state transport. You have the lathi. Call a band. Withdraw the trams, the buses, the public transport. Where will you go?
Absolutely.
So the band started becoming very successful. And this is where industry was hurt. Now, Mamata Banerjee first came to one of the chambers and announced, you will see no more bands when we come in. The first band, she did it. Now, this is where, unfortunately, it went down. And the latest episode, which is a very sad episode, where Bengal has been flashed all over the country for all the wrong reasons, Sandesh Khali. Sandesh Khali just did not happen. These women were for years made to suffer sexual harassment, rape. They were like paraded and people picked up. and asked to come where? To party office, Trinamool Congress party office. And men folks were told, they may be your wives, you have no right on them. When we are satisfied, we'll send them back. And that's what used to happen days in and days out. The women folk, or the, even the men folk, had no courage to come out. They died 100 deaths every day. Finally, when ED raided Sheikh Shah Jahan, and when ED officials were beaten, black and blue, cars smashed, West Bengal police, they didn't even take the phone calls. Not a single cop came out of the police station. Somehow this really got the goat of the villagers. That is when they came to protest. That is where the women folk took to protest. West Bengal police and the Trinamool Congress party and the government thought, this will also die down. We will ensure that it did not die down. It did not die down. Now, this went on. Now, one more thing. This Sandesh Khali, which we have seen, again, I don't want to really cause a panic amongst people. This is not just one place. There are many Sandesh Khalis ready to erupt. Sheikh Saad Jahan is not one. I'll just name two or three. Shaukat Mullah, Arabul Islam, all under the political umbrella of a former CPM minister, Jat Mullah. These are all CPM people, all CPM goons, all of them. I have seen them in CPM days. Now, they are all under the patronage of the MC. Now,
yes, Shishirji, I think it has been a very, very condemnable, extremely abhorrent kind of incident. And you gave a beautiful exposition, which was so comprehensive in various ways. And we would like to kind of bring it in segments, essentially, for the viewers and for taking the discussion forward. Just to kind of give a little bit of a personal kind of intervention or an insight, perspective of sorts. You mentioned about the Durgapur steel plant. So my own grandfather actually was one of the founding directors of the Durgapur steel plant. And he also had a firm of his own for steel as such in Durgapur itself. But over time, over you know the decades which you just mentioned about, the situation was so bad that you know he had to not only kind of wrap up operations in many ways, but also send away many of his staff. I mean, things were completely in disarray. And this is something which is a lived experience. And I'm sure people across Bengal saw the scourge of Naxalism, of course, as well as the many various other aspects that you mentioned. So coming to our next kind of point of discussion, and which we have already touched upon, which is very important. So with the rise of the left forces in West Bengal, the labor was politicized and the youth were funneled into this political machinery that saw the politics of development being intertwined with party patronage. Mm-hmm. So as you mentioned, the man days lost due to strikes in 1980 was, let's say, 1.48 million. But in 2000, it came to be about 3.11 as per the government of West Bengal's own economic review of 2004 and 5. And so the idea behind this was to do with this whole collective bargaining of sorts. And the essential element of these politicized labor concerns became the basis of what we see today as these political satraps who are wielding what can only be called localized militia. And the CPM displayed internal stagnation over time and rooted in unreconstructed Stalinism, as many put it, and traditional practices of paternalism. The party stifled internal debate, favored insiders for promotions across government jobs, civil services, and institutions. And this insular approach led to a sectarian attitude towards the non-party members and intellectuals, contributing to an overall decline in standards. So there was, of course, petty extortion, as you also highlighted, often under the guise of collecting for the party, as was put then, and it became widespread, while larger scale rackets orchestrated by affiliates of the CPM enjoyed the protection due to collusion with the police. And so the CPM's policy of favoring party members for all these positions, and this exclusionary practice was evident in urban areas where the Congress usually at various times had outperformed the CPM and rural regions where the CPM used to maintain significant support among the farmers. Now, under Mamata Banerjee's Trinamool Congress today, this leftist heritage of cut money and extortion collections across rural and urban West Bengal has been ubiquitous. So just to kind of, for the viewers, I would like to highlight a few small factoids here. So as per an Indian Express study recently, the cut money in West Bengal for the Samabhyathi scheme for funeral expenses is about rupees 200. For the Ujjwala scheme, it's about 500 or more. For quote unquote affordable housing, it's up to rupees 25,000. And even for the Mahatma Gandhi National Rural Employment Guarantee Act, it's about 20 to 40 rupees per day for employment guarantee as such. And in urban Pashchim Bongo, of course, you mentioned about the rule of syndicates as being supreme. So how do you see us coming out of this dire state of affairs in the state, which has actually, you know, across the different parties, whenever they have been in power, be it, you know, the CPM or Trinamool and going forward, this has become entrenched within the fabric of society or the political society, which has been engineered, so to say. So how do you see us coming out of this dire state of affairs?
Look, first of all, I'm a born optimist. I do not believe in gallo gallo. Yes, things are really bad. I live here. Things are really bad. But I will come to how we'll come out of it. But I can assure you, I can assure all your viewers, Bengal will rise. Bengal will rise and will challenge all the states to get its original position back. I'm that optimistic. But I'll come to that. So today, as you very rightly said, see, this during the left period, the CPM's period, it was all between party and non-party. Now, to give you certain inside stories, and these are facts. See, a CPM member, a party member, used to contribute to the party by a levy. This you will find even in the party's constitution, that every member has to pay an annual levy, which is a percentage of his wages or salaries. So it's actually a form of a taxation, which the party member has to pay. The party, what the party would do is ensure that the spouse of the member would get a government job or some other job. So that member would also pay the levy. The spouse would also pay the levy. And more important than the levy, that the member is now hooked to the party. Forget the ideology. Economically is hooked to the party. Because if you were out of the party, if you were thrown out of the party, your spouse's job goes. One unique thing about CPM, there was no provision of resigning from the party. It was once a year when your renewal of membership came. If you decided not to renew, that was your escape route. But that's not important. Now, you mentioned the various fixed rates, cut money. This is what was apparent. But in reality, it was many folds. I give you one more. Go around Calcutta. Go around central Calcutta. You know, in front of, go down Mahatma Gandhi Road, Jawaharlal Nehru Road. There are no pavements. It's all full of hawkers. How? Who gains with these hawkers? Yes, it provides livelihood to the unemployed. But if the shop sells, the state exchequer gets a tax revenue. When the hawker sells, the local dada and the police gets the revenue. You see the point? So the state's exchequer goes down. And the locals, by that I mean the dadas, the political dadas, and the local police, they are the ones who get the revenue. So today, police has even cut out a part of many roads, fenced it for pedestrians, because they know that pavements have gone. Why will the police fence a road for people to walk if they were not beneficiaries? Now, we talk about migrant workers. We talk about, you spoke about the cut money in MNREGA. Let me tell you, a person from Sundarbans one day came and met me. He was a party karyakarta of mine. And he said, Dada, I had gone to the bank to draw my 100 days money. And I drew and I came back to my hut. The Trinamool muscle man arrived. And he said, and I had to hand over the entire packet to him. He counted the money. He gave me 25% back. 75% he just pocketed and he walked out. So I said, but why did he let you go to the bank? He could have just as well gone himself. He said, he knows where will I go. Even if I go to the bank, I pick up the money, I have to wait for him to come and collect it from me. This is the state of affairs. This is extortion. And what does our chief minister say? Our chief minister thumps the table and says, my state is number one in 100 days job. I have said this many times, Madam Chief Minister, 100 days job is not an earning, it's the minimum guarantee. If you say you are number one, that means you are running a state where people are the highest unemployed in the country. She does not see that. Why? Because she and her goons make money on that. So for her, that is more important than a person getting an honest salary. This is the unfortunate. Now, we go to how will this state come out? This state will come out because people are seeing one thing about media. People see where the country is going. People see in the last 10 years where the country has gone, where Modi ji has taken the country to. We are touching new heights every day. Yesterday morning, country's first under river metro went here. People have seen it. Now, this retaliation will come. And it is happening. Why Sandesh Khali happened? It was a retaliation. You know, as we say, when paap ka ghada bhar jata hai, toh phatta hai. These sayings are not just in the air. These are facts. How long will you make people suffer? After all, why did all kingdoms in the world vanish? Why did Jamindaris go? How? Trinamool runs the government here. Is exactly what the British did when we were slaves. British hardly had many officers in India, in the East India Company. It was very few. So they would have a Raja, one of us. Raja, under the Raja, there would be a Jamindar. Under the Jamindar, there would be a Subedar. This is what Sheikh Shah Jahan, Arabul Islam, and Shaukat Mullah are. And they are the ones who care. Now, let's go back to the heydays. Why Bengal was at its top? Why the British came to the shores of Kolkata or Sutonoti, Kolikata those days? Why? Because they saw the wealth. Why did this gentleman from Rajasthan, who got the title of Jagat Seth, come to Murshidabad? Why? He saw the potential. By the way, that Jagat Seth was not a person. Jagat Seth was the title given to him because his hundis were legal tender across the world. Indian hundis were legal tender across the world. That was Bengal. That was Murshidabad. And this is where we were residing. These kind of examples are galore. I give you even till late 60s. Entire North Calcutta, you know, the famous Bada Bazaar, which is known as, it was the commercial hub of, was known all over the country. Bada Bazaar had many so-called basas. Basas were dwelling places. So people from all over the country came looking to Bengal for work. Bengal was the bread basket, not just from an agriculture point of view, but also from an employment point of view. It provided bread to everybody. So bachelors would come, stay in the basa. They would get one, you know, they'd rent one cot. upstairs on the roof of the kitchen, there's no basa left. Give you one statistic. One common food item in the country today is idli dosa, right? Kolkata city had 2,200 idli dosa shops, down to 300. Who told me this? One South Indian shopwala told me. Sardarji's, all Sardarji's, all taxis were run by them. You don't see a single Sardar. Why? They've got a better places to go and work. There's no work here. It was said that trains used to come full of students to get Vidya here. This is the land of Saraswati. This is where Vidya was. And trains used to go empty. Today, trains go full of not just students, of all our youth seeking for jobs outside. Trains come empty. Bidhannagar, Salt Lake, which is Calcutta's twin city, is an old age home today. I call it a Vidhrashram. Why? All the youth are gone. One day my son tells me, I have hardly anyone of my age here. So this is where we are. But again, this revolt is taking place. Believe you me, the right government is going to come to this state. I don't want to get into politics, but this government change is now inevitable. What Modi ji has given to the country, this state cannot be kept away from that. This state will also benefit. And this is where this state will fight for its original position.
Absolutely. And I think the multifaceted way or in which the current government in the state has actually made the state suffer, unfortunately. I mean, when you talk about the deterioration of the educational system, one just wonders, as a history buff, I mean, what was started back in the day in the 12th or 11th, 13th century with the destruction of places like Somapura and Jagadala Vihara, right, which were centers of intellectualism and spirituality, unfortunately, because of politicking and corruption, is being taken forward in the modern times in a very different way, but to the same kind of effect, essentially, where there is a drain of drainage of, you know, the talent that we see, the brains that we have and have always had in Bengal, so to say. Now, coming back again to the recent incident, which has been in the news and which has made Bengal be in the news for the wrong reasons, is, of course, the tragic episode that has happened in Sandeshkhali. So allegations of land grabbing and systemic sexual exploitation against Shah Jahan have been making the rounds. And however, what is rather strange, or actually not so strange and sinister, is the way in which the state machinery has been colluding, of course, and protecting. So for instance, the West Bengal police refused to hand over the case of Shah Jahan to the central kind of investigation bodies. And I mean, the government itself has actually gone against it in a very vocal manner. The interesting point is that Shah Jahan once was a laborer in Sandeshkhali's fisheries and brick kilns, if I'm not mistaken, and he joined CPM in 2004, guided by his uncle. And then in 2012, he shifted to Trinamool Congress, aligning with Mukul Roy and Jyotiprio Mallick, rising to power and with political support, making this fishery mafia, so to say, that seized farmlands for fish ponds, exploiting the poor farmers. And there have been incidents of various kinds of physical violence in the most kind of gruesome way, with kodaler dant, like the wooden spade handle for land grabbing, flooding the farmlands with saline water to make it unfit for irrigation purposes, and so on and so forth. And so the able-bodied men have had to migrate to other parts of the country, as well as across the world even, leaving the elderly and women vulnerable to these attacks by the likes of Shah Jahan. And so one just wonders, because there has been an episode of this kind back in the CPM days, when we talk about the Morijhapi massacre of the Dalit Hindu refugees, which was a very unfortunate incident in the tenure of Jyoti Bosu and the CPM government, where the irony is that anywhere between 5,000 to 50,000 were killed in those massacres. However, the state record said that only two died during those massacres, so to say. And the level of corruption, the level of governmental complicitness and perversion of the system is again being seen under the Trinamool Congress in the context of Sondesh Khali. So could you please give us a little more insight into this whole phenomenon of governmental collusion and the manner of perverting the entire system in this brazen a manner, so to say?
First of all, let me touch once on this Shah Jahan. He actually was also a migrant, an infiltrator from Bangladesh. And that is how he came here. All of them, and I won't name some of the ministers of this present government, all, you may have a humble beginning, I have no problem. The country's prime minister had the most humble beginning. He was selling, as a kid, he was selling tea for, delivering tea for his father in the railway platform. That's not an issue. He's actually grown up from there. But some of the ministers who today have amassed huge wealth, one of them was selling egg rolls. I do not decry the selling of egg roll. It is an honest job if you do it honestly, not the way they have done. Two ministers got together, filled up the water bodies, which cannot be done as per law, as per order of the High Court. And a huge, huge complex called Gulshan has come up, where not a single Hindu can live. Yes, sir. And where is it? It is just within the municipal area of Kolkata. It's in your heart of Kolkata. A Rohingya Basti has come up in the heart of Salt Lake. A Rohingya Basti has come up. How has it come without state support? Going back to Sandesh Khali, Sheikh Shah Jahan was on the run for 55 days. I challenge anybody, he was not on the run. He was in the tender care, mind my words, tender care of West Bengal police. You know why? It is unfortunate that the Director General and Inspector General of West Bengal police himself was on the run for 20 days from the law. So police force who's top number one was on the run himself for 20 days. For him, a fugitive on the run is normal, na? So, coming to this area again, how was he caught? It was decided that today we have to hand him over. But before that, below Sheikh Shah Jahan, the three Hindu netas of Trinamool Congress were first handed over. Again, see this. It just did not happen. It was part of a design. First, the Hindu netas were handed over, then Shah Jahan. And by the way, what you said about not handing over to CBI, each step, West Bengal government has spent the taxpayers' money to go to Supreme Court to stop central investigation. And each time they have lost. This time too, they stopped CBI. Now, this Sheikh Shah Jahan case, when the court ordered, they refused on the basis that we have gone to Supreme Court. So till Supreme Court verdict, we will not hand over. Has the Supreme Court admitted your SLP? Even before that, forcibly they said no. It's only when the Honorable High Court of Calcutta said 4 p.m. or I'll do contempt that they had to hand over. One scene which we saw on the TV, when Sri Sheikh Shah Jahan was in the car with the West Bengal police, I was wondering when I saw the visuals on the TV screen whether he was under arrest or the police was arrested by him. When he would walk, all the police would stand at attention. By the way, when police stand at attention, that's their form of saluting. They were saluting Sheikh Shah Jahan, who's in under arrest. Poor chap. I really felt bad for him. Today he was made to really feel like a detainee when he was physically handed over to CBI, you should have seen his entire, that whole swagger, every went in one shot. He realized, as they say, dal chawal ka dam. Now, this is how these people have to be. Look, he is a criminal. But he was treated as, in Bangla, we would call jamayador.
Absolutely. And sir, I think that is, you just mentioned about these three Hindu leaders being put forward before Shah Jahan himself. And this is kind of in continuation to a long kind of, tradition of appeasement-based politics that has been going on for a while. And therefore, the whole stance against the Trinamool, or this whole brand of politics, is not as much for just politics for the namesake of politics itself, but for a more kind of civilization and a more comprehensive overview of Bharat as a nation, as a Rashtra, as well as our people, essentially. The Hindus have been at the receiving end of many of her policies, many of her initiatives in the wrong way. So for instance, be it her over-the-top reactions on Jai Shri Ram chants, in May 2019, the rise of radical figures like the fatwa man of Bengal, Nuru Rahman Barkati, who famously promised to pay anyone who blackened PM Modi's face, and has graced Trinamool Congress rallies in the past, the state government curtailing the time traditionally permitted for the immersion of Durga idols to allow for a break for Eid to happen in 2016, subsequently restricting idol immersion on Dashami beyond 6 in 2017, the militant outfits like Harkatul Jihadi Islami, the HUJI, spreading their tentacles deep into the countryside of Bengal, even frivolous tactics like the West Bengal Council of Higher Education, replacing the Bengali word for rainbow from Ram Dhenu, which translates or transliterates rather to Ram's bow, to Rong Dhenu, which is the bow of colors, and the persecution of patriotic citizens like Padma Shri Qazi Masoom Akhtar by fundamentalists in the state when he asked his students to sing the national anthem, all point towards this worrying descent of the state into a pit of appeasement-based politics, communalism, and intolerance, to the extent that even Asaduddin Owaisi spoke about Mamata Banerjee looking down to the Muslims of the state as human indicators of Muslims being very low, and yet her appeasing them for votes, essentially, right? So, and if you look at the records and if you look at the data from the Center for the Study of Developing Societies, for instance, the Trinamool Congress has secured a sizable chunk of the Muslim votes right from 2016. So it was about 51% in 2016, 70% in 2019, and thereafter 75% in the 2021 assembly elections. So looking at this, all these developments that have been taking place, right from the time when she put a lockdown during the Sri Ram Janmabhoomi Teerth Kshetra Bhumi Pujan, to today when she is talking about waging jihad on the BJP and various other forces in the country, it has gone from bad to worst. So what are your thoughts on the same?
See, let's go one by one. Imam Barkati, if you ask any Muslim leader or a Islamic scholar, will tell you Imam Barkati was not fit to be made an Imam. I will not get into the specifics. I know a few things. It was his brother who was to be made an Imam. I'm going back to CPM days. Imam Barkati was appointed Imam during CPM time. Imam Barkati had done a few things which he should have lost his Imam position there and then. But he was protected. Now, when Modi ji wanted to remove this these red light, flashing light on people's cars, make people, this remove the VVIP culture. Imam Barkati, when he was told you have to remove the red light from your car, about how did he get a red light? Only Mamata Banerjee can answer. But you know what he said? He said, no power on earth can remove my red light. This was given to me by the British. British have to come and take it. That was his ashparda. Now, the fatwa, by the way, for clarification of your viewers, fatwa is not an edict. Fatwa is a response to a question of a faithful to his imam. And now what some of these imams do, in answering the question, they twist the answer in a manner that it reads like an edict. Yeah? So this is a fatwa. Now, I have met the president of Tipu Sultan Mosque, where he was Imam. And I told him, oh, by the way, yes, yes, of course, who does not know your mosque? After all, Imam Barkati. He took umbrage. He said, I'm the president. Who's that? He's a nobody. I mean, this is his standing in his own mosque. Now, you spoke about Durga Puja and Eid. Yes, this what you've said has exactly happened. Durga Puja immersion was stopped. We had to go to court. We have to go to court even this year in Entelli, which is a hugely minority area. 50% of the population of Entelli Vidhan Sabha area is Muslim. One young man belonging basically to the OBC tribe wanted to do Durga Puja. Calcutta police said no, as per High Court, no permissions can be given because no new permissions are to be given. This man goes to court alone, he fought it. He went to court and he said in his petition, but Calcutta police has permitted a new puja last year. So the police were asked, said, yes, this happened. Well, how did you? We did not permit. He did the puja without our permission, so it's okay. It was Trinamool sponsored. So the court said, so if he does not ask your permission, it will happen. I permit this puja. Puja happened. For puja, we have to go to court. For Bhasan, we have to go to court. Why? This is all politics of appeasement. And by the way, there are a few Muslims who she does not like. For them, it's the lockup. For them, it's the lockup. There, then, it's not Muslim. Now, these twisting of words, do you know they tried to change the word of ma? Are baba, amra ke ma na boli? In which bhasa there is no ma? Change it to amma. Right? Ammi. What you said about Ramdhanu. In Hindi, Indradhanush. Shardhya Ramdhanush. Dinajpur, this case everyone will remember. This school had vacancy for two teachers of science. Sorry, two teachers of Bengali. Two Urdu teachers were pushed in. By the way, there is no Urdu speaking person in Dinajpur. Even the Muslims are not Urdu speaking. Urdu speaking Muslims in Bengal are only in Calcutta and around Calcutta. In the whole of the state of West Bengal, the Muslims are all Bangla speaking Muslims. They were pushed. They pushed two Urdu teachers. When the students protected, police opened fire. Two kids got shot dead. Parents refused to cremate the bodies. This has happened. If you ask for Bangla teachers, you get shot. Now, this again, I would say, alarming. But aapke paap ka ghada bhara ja raha hai.
Absolutely. And I think it's very important to also look at this aspect. Ki paap ka ghada to bhar gaya hai, par unko somehow, miraculously, magically, they keep on holding on to various, tiers of power, so to say. And so my next question kind of revolves around this aspect, which has been a very kind of, unfortunately, centered around the state of West Bengal for a while. So West Bengal contributes 42 seats to the Lok Sabha and is a very important kind of state, so to say, when it comes to national governance and politics. But electoral malpractices and the art of scientific rigging, so to say, is something that the Trinamool Congress seems to have inherited from its predecessor, the Left Front, in the state. So back in the day, for instance, the CPM cadre network increasingly resorted to malified and strong-armed tactics to win elections. There were instances when no opposition polling agents would be present in the polling booths, while in other cases, people were forced to vote for a certain candidate or not allowed to vote at all. An interesting statistics here is that the number of uncontested seats in panchayat elections since 1978 has kept increasing, with 11% being uncontested in 2003. And this trend is continuing to increase under the TMC, with 34% being won uncontested by the TMC in 2018. And so the macabre theater of this absurd was accentuated by symbolism also, which was very kind of absurd, which was very sick, so to say, when they sent white saris, which are traditionally worn by widows in Hindu families, to the wives of opposition candidates, warning that the possible removal of the candidate from existence itself if they went through with their nominations. So mainstream, the leftist weekly, which has been around and in circulation for a while, itself spoke about instances of political murders. 55,000 political murders between 1977 and 2009. Scientific poll rigging was very much kind of intertwined with this whole aspect of how to either kind of intimidate or to kind of completely sabotage the entire process of the elections. So when votes were done, votes were cast rather, it was called as votes were being done, essentially, right? And there were reports of cadres and hooligans across various villages. There were local committees which were present in every phase of the election, undertaking research to see which areas are, marginal seats or marginal areas or may vote against the ruling party and so on and so forth. So all of this has been going on for a while and is part of the reason why both the left and the TMC has been, holding a lot of ground in especially the local bodies, the political bodies, as well as in other kind of tiers of power. So how do you see us ensure that the integrity of the democratic process is reinforced in West Bengal so that we can see a positive change going forward?
Okay. Very, very well put by you. West Bengal is very important on the, on the political map of the country, or I would say even the governance map of the country. After all, our elected representatives are those who make the laws. So that's where the country is governed by. So number one state in the country is UP with 80 seats, Maharashtra with 48, Bengal with 42. So this is where we are. Now, very soon, by the time you go on the air, I think elections will be announced. Very soon it will be announced. I don't know when, but very soon. And very soon, we will be in headlong into the electoral mode. We are already in electoral mode. And again, in 2 months' time, everything will be over. The results will be out. I can assure you, West Bengal will show up results which will surprise everyone, pleasantly surprise, won't surprise me. It'll be music to our ears. It'll be a shock to the ruling party here, because that is how, and they can see it. It's not, they are no fools. They know what the reality is on the ground. But coming to what you said about the rigging, the scientific rigging. See, the scientific rigging was started by CPM after the first 10 years of the 34-year rule. First 10 years, Bengal elections used to be very violent. Slowly, the violence started coming down because what took over was not the Dandaka election, but the Kalamka election. Everything was settled from beginning, from the voter list. So first principle, dead voters cannot be removed from the list. They must remain in the list. Because when dead men vote, no one tells tales, no? They quietly go and vote. You remember the very famous movie, Bhooter Bhavishyat. So here the Bhoot also has a Bhavishyat in the polling. And I have, as one of the responsibilities I have from the party, I head the Election Commission Department. And this is where I've taken up with the Election Commission. The other scientific rigging was duplicate voters. So you can go and vote. Now, you may be duplicate voters. If it's in the same booth, it's a little difficult. But if there's an agent to challenge you, if there's none, you'll go and aram se vote. But if you're in another booth or another Vidhan Sabha, aram se doge. This year, we took to the Election Commission detailed 17 lakh duplicate voters. And by the way, for your viewers, what was the difference in 2019 results between BJP and Trinamool? 17 lakhs. Duplicate voters were precisely 16,91,000. The difference between Trinamool and BJP in 2019 Lok Sabha was 17,33,000 there. And in the duplicate voters, there were nearly 12,000 duplicate where even the voter ID card numbers were same. You see, everyone, and if you tell Trinamool, they say, well, what, not our fault, Election Commission of India did it. Election Commission of India does not have any staff. It is done by the DM's office. Who runs the DM's office? QED. Now, this is the extent of so-called scientific rigging. But by the way, we caught it. We gave them each detail of each duplicate voter. So we are sure coming years, we will read this out. Now you talked about panchayat. You see, this is the problem. I hope someday this law will change. In our country, elections are held under two different laws. The Representation of People's Act is for the legislature. That means the Vidhan Sabha and the Lok Sabha. And the Rajya Sabha. The Rajya Sabha also comes, but the voting pattern is different. It's not a direct vote. It's a single transferable vote by the MLAs. Now, looking at the Vidhan Sabha and the Lok Sabha, it's under the Representation of People's Act, where the primacy is of the Election Commission of India. They are the all supreme. The panchayat and the municipal elections are held under the laws of each state. In most of the states, at least in West Bengal, I know for sure, in West Bengal, the primacy is of the government of West Bengal. Everything, every important thing is with the government of West Bengal. Even when I met the state election commissioner, in my various meetings, they said, yes, you have the authority to decide what will be the lunch menu served to the polling staff. More than that, nothing is in your hand. Now, in the panchayat and municipal elections, requisitioning central forces is also in the hands of the state or the state commission, which effectively means the state. So this is where, as you said, many were declared elected, uncontested, because no one else was given the chance to file the nomination. But let me put some figures before your viewers. Despite that, BJP this time polled, what we polled is the total of all opposition. We have polled more than, not polled, our victories of BJP candidates, whether it is Gram Panchayat, Panchayat Samiti or Jilla Parishad, what we have secured as victories, the total of all opposition parties is less than BJP. So see the gap. Second, if I look at the polling percentage, we have jumped to 28%. Despite all this, because there's been a retaliation there as well. See, how long will you continue this? At some point, people get fed up. They retaliate. Now, this is where the retaliation has come. So this time, what they did, when they realized that they are losing blocks after blocks, all of a sudden, the BDOs, while counting votes, they see BJP is leading. The vote counting stopped. All of a sudden, result announced, BJP is lost. So they have gone into every possible trick of the trade, realizing that they are not winning. So they have to do this rigging, mass-scale rigging. Yet, we scored very well. We formed many boards. This time, they could not. They would physically break our boards, get people away, kidnap people. This time, they have done in a few, but could not do as much as they could do earlier. So these are all signs of where we are going.
And sir, I mean, that is a very important step taken by the BJP and yourself in terms of trying to put forth the facts, essentially. The Trinamool, on the other hand, has been trying to use various different tactics. I mean, one, for instance, also that they are trying to, they have been trying to alter the demographics of many of the constituencies, many of the districts, essentially, with the support given to illegal Bangladeshi immigrants for vote bank politics. So for instance, recently in November 2022, the Trinamool Congress MLA Khokon Das, he triggered this controversy when he said that TMC workers should help Bangladeshi immigrants get their name on the voters list if they are supporting the Trinamool Congress, the ruling party in the state. Earlier in 2021, there were certain Mahatma Gandhi National Rural Employment Guarantee Act payments which were made to Bangladeshi nationals in Novogrom due to fraudulent activities of the Upapradhan of the Guru Pashla Gram Panchayat. And so since this matter is one of national security, and I say that because my mother is from Assam, and I have seen a situation of sorts being developing, a very severe and a very serious situation developing in southern Assam, particularly around Bongaigaon and various other districts and areas of Assam. It is one where there is a certain kind of massive flux, so to say, a massive, almost an inundation of immigrants who were earlier in Assam. There was the Congress government, of course, and they were trying to do that in a systematic manner. And we are seeing that here in Bengal as well, where there are district after districts which have been completely, the demographics has completely been changed dramatically. So how do you see us as a Rashtra working against this worrying development?
Look, this is a fact of life, what you have said. Let me also give you another figure. This change of demographics, from, let's say, nearly four decades back, this influx has happened, sometimes high, sometimes low, but it always happens. One district has been successful in keeping the infiltration as close to nil as possible. One district on the border with a huge border with Bangladesh. You'll be surprised that district is Murshidabad. You know why? Because they are in majority. I always tell them, see, they are Muslims. All Muslims here are not Bangladeshi infiltrators. They are Indian Muslims. They have right as much as yours and mine. I always tell them, ye tumhara kaun sa bhai hai bhai? The first thing he does, he comes and snatches food from your plate. And they realize it. And Murshidabad has managed it very well. But this influx has taken place. It is now down, it's the speed of this infiltration is low. By the way, why are they against CAA? CAA does not take anyone's right of citizenship. This is how they have put the fear of the devil in the Muslims' mind to polarize their votes. That if BJP comes in this state, they will throw you out. There is not one half sentence in CAA which gives the authority to take away somebody's right. CA only gives right to the persecuted minorities of those three countries. That means primarily Hindus. Hindus, when persecuted, where will the Hindus go? Even though we call ourselves a secular country, but look, we are a Hindu country, no? We are 80% Hindus. You can call ourselves secular only because we are 80% Hindus. Name me any other country which calls itself secular, or which, where this kind of a population is there? None. Now, when we say about the future, see, this slowly is coming down. The border is to a great extent now fenced. The problem in Bangladesh-Bengal border especially, a lot of areas are riverine. See, I can give you one figure. I think roughly 25% of our border is riverine. That is where the problem is. Otherwise, a lot of fencing has taken place despite West Bengal government of Trinamool Congress, Mamata Banerjee, fighting tooth and nail against fencing. When the border, the control area of BSF was increased from 15 kilometers to 50, she was one chief minister who said, do not cooperate with BSF. Does anyone say this? And Trinamool, if you ask a Trinamool person, he'll say, but the border is yours. Why is there infiltration? What are you doing? Bhai, please remember, BSF is not a police force. BSF cannot arrest a person. If BSF holds a person, holds, detains, has to immediately hand over to the local police. What does the local police do? Feeds him and lets him go. This is the problem. But again, on the positive note, this is reducing. Fencing has happened. BSF is more alert. And this will reduce more. But will it stop? No, the imbalance between the two economies is such that it will not stop. And this vote bank politics will go on. Even when they lose, they'll still try.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's very important that you highlighted this point that, you know, the government is going ahead with kind of securing the borders, of course. And it's interesting that you mentioned Murshidabad, because if I'm not mistaken, Murshidabad and Malda are areas where I think the Trinamool is not as strong as in many other places. Even though there is a sizable kind of Muslim population, there has been a little lot of resistance from the ground, so to say, in Murshidabad and Malda, you know, in the recent past. Now, coming to this aspect of the infiltration, and thankfully, we are kind of getting a control on that. But West Bengal has also been a hotbed of terrorism, unfortunately, in recent times. In July 2022, for instance, the Special Task Force of the West Bengal government intercepted a pickup van in Birbhum district in, I think, Mohammed Bazar, seizing about 81,000 detonators. Rintu Sheikh, the alleged mastermind, was arrested. The NIA in September 2020, 2 years before, had arrested six terrorists with links to the Al-Qaeda from Murshidabad in West Bengal. There are organizations like the Ansarut Tawhid v Bilad Hind, the AUT, which is an India-specific jihadi outfit that has pledged allegiance to the Islamic State back in September 2014. Even had an online propaganda for ISIS in Bengali in November 2015. So when we have a chief minister like Mamata Banerjee, who's calling upon her partymen and supporters in Asansol in July of 2022 to launch a jihad against the BJP, what are your thoughts in this crass manner of, you know, the jihadification, so to say, or at least the attempts thereof, of West Bengal, and thereby the ripple effects across the country and elsewhere?
Mrityunjay, let me remind you, Durga Puja 2014, precisely on 2nd of October, there's a huge, huge blast at noon in Khagragar. Khagragar is Bardhaman. Huge blast. Two youth died on the spot in this house. Two women came out. It was these two men who they died in the hospital, but they were badly injured. They preferred, and they claimed that they were the husbands, they preferred to let them writhe in pain, but held the people at gunpoint so that they couldn't come into the house, because this was a safe house making bombs. And you know what West Bengal police did? By an exchange of WhatsApp messages, they detonated all the evidences under the name of controlled detonation. All evidences were destroyed before NIA could come in. BJP held a press conference, and I had done some homework for that. Those bombs were not for West Bengal. Bangladeshi to hit into the politics of Bangladesh, this group was given safe passage. See how much inland they have traveled from the border to Bardhaman to have a safe passage, a safe house in Bardhaman to make bombs. Yeah, this is the jihadi infiltration. Trinamool leaders have died in bomb blast. These were not bomb blasts, were accidental blasts while making these country bombs, crude bombs. Yet, their leader does not take any lesson because it's part of a plan. Now, NIA swung into action. Imagine where all evidence are destroyed. Controlled detonation. What does the NIA do? Second, just a year later, 2015, 2nd of October, few of us, including me, we went there for a march to commemorate 1 year of this. They didn't even let us come outside of Burdwan town. Now, those, you know, during Durga Puja nowadays in West Bengal, no newspapers are printed. They ensured that for 3 days, television did not show this. This was a sponsorship, a censorship. Who were they protecting? Why did you do this? If these are miscreants, expose them. There's an issue. Without naming, one of the members of parliament in Rajya Sabha was the founder of SIMI, against whom there was a report from the Indian bureaus against him. It is a fact for his terrorist activities. And this person was sent to Rajya Sabha. And the moment you go to the hallowed precincts of the Rajya Sabha or any Lok Sabha, you're an honorable MP, Mananiya Sansad. And here is the person who was the founder of one of the banned organizations of our country. This is the unfortunate position. Again, I do not want a single viewer of yours to feel, how will we come out of this? I can assure you, have faith in Bharat Sarkar. This Bharat Sarkar means business. This Bharat Sarkar will deliver for every Bharatiya, which includes us Bengalis. We are also Bharatiya.
Absolutely. I think this Bharat Sarkar is the one that undertook the abrogation of Article 370, something which has been in the books, so to say, in the proverbial books, or just for the sake of politicking, out there, essentially for 70 odd years. And also, so to say, various other measures of security. This Bharat Sarkar is the one that has brought forth the Shri Ram Janmabhoomi Tirth Kshetra Pran Pratishthan as well, an issue that has been going on for about 500 years, of sorts, and various other aspects of national security and civilizational, heritage as well. Now, when we talk about Mamata Banerjee, right? I mean, she has at least tried to portray herself as this alternative, to obviously Shri Narendra Modi ji, and as a leader of the opposition, somebody who could be, the prime minister at some point in time. Now, one of the things that she banks upon is obviously this so-called development model, specifically looking at healthcare, education, and agriculture, right? There's a need to kind of look into this in slightly greater detail, right? I mean, in terms of, for instance, recently, the West Bengal Pollution Control Board accused Ames Kalyani of not obtaining the environmental clearances and slapped a penalty of rupees 15 crore under the guidelines of the Ministry of Environment. And this is in the light of, the faltering healthcare system in West Bengal. This was not quite a positive development, of course. And in a multivariate analysis of Bengal's healthcare by a team at the University of North Bengal led by Indrajit Roy Chaudhary, it was found that 13 districts of West Bengal had low levels of healthcare availability inputs, with these districts accounting for almost 60% of the land and 65% of the population. The results show that the districts with low healthcare quality and accessibility are Purulia, Malda, Uttar Dinajpur, Dakhin Dinajpur, Jalpaiguri, and Kuchbihar, constituted by around 17.96 million people. So this whole idea of healthcare being something which there is an alternative, for instance, Mamata Banerjee has put forth alternatives to Ayushman Bharat, has not allowed many elements of that to kind of come through, for instance, that has really affected the people of Bengal. So how do you see us going forward with this dimension of human development in the state?
She definitely has this grandiose vision. But Bharat is very, very fortunate. Bharat is very fortunate because each time she has had this grandiose vision about being, about leading the country, she has fallen flat on her face. And this vision of hers is not now. I have seen it going back to early 2000. I can name incidences when she had these visions for Delhi, and each time she fell flat, including when she tried to have a tie-up with Arvind Kejriwal, and nobody turned up for her rally in Delhi. She had to give a speech to empty chairs. So this is the fortunate part. Every time on a national front, she gets shunned. This alliance, which was put up, by the way, this India alliance, I always, you know, in English, we have this term, united we stand, divided we fall. India alliance is best described as divided we stand, united we fall. Now, here, she tried to take control when she found that nobody is ceding control to her. She walked out. Okay? My look, you have 42 MPs. You wipe out BJP, what's the best you can get? You can get 42. You can't get 43, can you? With 42 MPs, you can't even move a resolution in parliament. You need 50. Where do you have these dreams? So, frankly, it's good for us that these dreams of hers are not likely. I can't say we'll never bear fruit. After all, we are a democracy. It's unlikely to bear fruits. And now, so what does she do? She stops AIIMS. She stops Ayushman Bharat. She repaints central projects. She puts stickers on top of central projects. And by the way, there are projects where center gives you 60% grant. She won't have that because that is central. The center says, but we would like the name, we would like this and this, and this is how you have to use the money. No, I will do it my way. And the state is in debt. It's in complete debt. But yet, for her ego, because I can't take center's word for it. I can't take center's dictate for it. I will not let it happen. Bengal, which is the highest number of migrant workers, Parijay Shramik, highest numbers. By not having Ayushman Bharat. Okay, Bengal has a Swasthya Sathi. I concede, they have Swasthya Sathi for the people here. How will the migrant workers who are under Swasthya Sathi get covered outside of state of West Bengal? Ayushman Bharat is an all-India policy, bhai. How will they get covered? And this is where she's... But no, I want Swasthya Sathi. Now, do you know one thing? Originally, there was a tie-up between Swasthya Sathi and Ayushman Bharat. All of a sudden, she felt that the communications, people will get to know that this is central. Snapped. This is the truth. But for the people of West Bengal, it's not good. See, if we were a state where we were receiving workers from outside, where our brothers and sisters were not going out, not in big numbers, you could afford to be insular. Still, nobody is insular in today's day. But today, we are the ones who are exporting people out. So, these are problems.
Absolutely. And sir, I mean, looking at the human, you know, development parameters, also Bengal, I mean, in terms of agriculture, and I mean, you mentioned about the workers moving out. I mean, Bengal has been facing a problem with agriculture as well. Of course, the food economy of Bharat has had significant contributions from Bengal. Unfortunately, due to various elements, market forces, of course, as well as rapid commercialization, There have been a lot of variations of how we kind of go for, let's say, even paddy, right? I mean, the rice varieties which are being selected. So there was a recent study which was very interesting, where people have been going for, or rather not going for, some of the traditional varieties such as Guligati, Kanchanani, Hathirdani, Paboshi, and so on and so forth. And so there is a lot of kind of decline in them. And unfortunately, this has led to problems with respect to cyclones, for instance, in some of the districts, inundating the regions, and the modern salt tolerant varieties of rice not being able to kind of work with that saline zone, essentially. Notwithstanding that, there has also been problems with, for instance, vegetables and fruit production and exports. Bengal ranks among the top states in vegetable and food production, with a valuation of more than 5,500 crores of exports of vegetables and fruits. And however, there has been inadequate preservation and procurement both, which has led to a big problem. And lastly, also, if you look at climate change, which has been a major player across the world, there is this very interesting trend where the monsoon patterns have been changing a lot in Bengal, with the northern parts of Bengal receiving a lot of, or rather a deficit of rain, whereas the southern districts and other arid zones in Bankura and Purulia, for instance, getting a surplus. So there is a need for a lot of adaptive kind of policy measures, a lot of different kinds of policy recommendations that bring together these recent developments, almost in a game theoretic way, so to say, almost looking at the uncertainty resilience. And given that, I don't see that coming from the government of West Bengal at the moment in terms of addressing these problems, so to say. So how do you see us going forward in terms of integrating the national vision of the central government, of course, as well as looking at these very localized problems that have cropped up when it comes to agriculture in Bengal?
Okay. Now, for the agriculture part, I'll have to take you even before 2011, before Trinamool Congress came to power here. Go back to 1977. For the first 15 years of the CPM-led left government, land reform was implemented to the hilt. Now, land reform has certain very strong plus points, because the landless tillers, just the khet mazdoor, they also get land. The jamidari system is feudal. Why democracy does not settle in Pakistan? Jamidari, to a great extent, is responsible. We were one people, no? Till 1947. How come we are the world's largest and the most thriving democracy and they are a failed democracy? They are a failed state, but feudalism to a great extent. Now, everything has a cycle. As we have all studied, law of diminishing return starts and then law of negative return comes in. In West Bengal, land reforms has got into the phase of law of negative returns. You see, the parcel of land became so small, and 1 acre owned by one farmer, in the third generation, there were 12 people sharing that 1 acre, no? Right? And now parcels have become so small that what you spoke about, the developments, they can't afford it. These new strains of rice, potatoes, there's a huge potato cultivation, the entire Hooghly Belt. Today, for potato chips, which you get packaged chips, they are special potato strains. The size is the same. They cut similar. You know, it's now today, everything is scientific. I'm not talking of the GM. I'm talking of natural. But these new strains, as you mentioned, the many rice strains. If you do not have the minimum viable size of a farm, what will you do? You cannot even have equipment, because this law of negative return kicked in. This is the huge, I would say, negative contribution of the CPM-led left. They did not know where to stop. They did not know what to do as an antidote. they just went on and on and on. Because Shilpopotir kalo haath bhenge dao, Jomindare kalo haath pudiye dao. So if everybody is kalo haath, then you know, you'll be only left with ashes. So this is where, now what you talk about weather. Here, full faith in Bharat Sarkar. Timely warnings are given. And it's for the state to implement. And Bharat Sarkar, in times of these crises, is fully there. Whether SDRF or not, NDRF is there with the people. We have seen it. We have seen it. Despite the fact that she wanted to make money in these disasters also. Till she's there, she can do all this. Now, you mentioned about the abrogation of 370. I'll just quickly touch on that. Abrogation of Article 370 and 35A brought in huge prosperity to a state which was riddled with terrorism, which was riddled with poverty because only two families benefited. And don't, let us not forget this great son of West Bengal who gave his life in Srinagar for Do Vidhan, Do Pradhan, Do Nishan Nahi Chalega. By abrogating 370 and 35A, the dream of this great son of West Bengal was met, no? And we in West Bengal, we Hindu Bengalis, wouldn't be here but for him. Let's not forget, he was the industry minister. His vision was for industry. He was in West Bengal Assembly. Look up the records of West Bengal Assembly. His utterances on industrial growth. So we must name him, and of course, all the great sons of West Bengal. You know, when you talk about agriculture, all of us recite Vande Mataram. Sujalam Sufalam Malay Jashitalam. Bankim Chandra, when he wrote this, which field was he visualizing? Which field was this Sujalam Sufalam? Our field, no? It was the fields of West Bengal. He was not visualizing the rest of the country. I'm sure he must have been looking outside his window when he wrote this. That's how poets got inspiration. We are in the real basket. And this is where, okay, our farmers are surviving because we have the fortune, we have the bounty of Mother Nature. But we have not been able to encash on it.
Absolutely. And I think you mentioned about, of course, I would like to take this moment to highlight and, celebrate the memory of Shri Shyama Prasad Mukherjee, who has been a pillar of Indian democracy right from the infantile days of India as a nation itself. Also, there were various other Bengali leaders as well during before independence, including Surendranath Banerjee, for instance, of the Congress, but obviously very vocal, very kind of out there among the masses, trying to mobilize the agrarian communities, various other cross sections of the Indian communities to kind of move forward towards a certain element of coming back into political, having political agency, so to say. My final kind of point or kind of to bring the entire discussion around, one cannot but not look at the aspect of education. Bengal was once and has been for a while the intellectual hub of the nation, with giants of science such as Acharyas Jagdish Chandra Bosu, Satyendranath Bosu, Prafulla Chandra Ray, and even Nobel laureate C.V. Raman having been working with the Calcutta University. Today, however, the situation is quite dismal. The gross enrollment ratio in senior secondary education in West Bengal has been around 51.54 as against the national average of 56.16. As per last taken in 2015-16 by the Ministry of Human Resource Development, Government of India. When it comes to higher education, the ratio was just 17.7 against the national average of 24.5. For scheduled caste and scheduled tribe communities, the number was even lesser at 12.8% and 9.5%, respectively, in the state of West Bengal. The number of colleges per lakh population, as well as the pupil to teacher ratio, is much lesser in West Bengal than the national average. And several cases have come in terms of corruption when it comes to the education sector in West Bengal. Obviously, the most well-known one being the multi-crore cash for school jobs incidences that have been in the courts recently. And the Enforcement Directorate of India found that the rate chart for the position of a teacher in a municipality-run school is about rupees 5 lakhs. And 250 crore rupees were generated by various accused, like the former West Bengal Minister Partho Chatterjee and his close aide Arpita Mukherjee in the primary teachers recruitment scam. So how do we stem this free fall in the education system of West Bengal going forward?
Well, we can't forget this is the state where Saraswati is worshipped. This is the state of Goddess Saraswati. Devi Saraswati is worshipped all over the country, but like Durga Kali, Saraswati also is worshipped here. Like we in our Hindu religion, Ganesh is worshipped all over, but if you say Ganesh, you'll attribute Maharashtra to it. If you talk about Shiravali Mata, you'll straight go to the north, right? So this is how. So in the land of Saraswati, who did they cheat on? They cheated on Goddess Saraswati. For the first time, I don't think anywhere we have seen a pile of cash just thrown, where counting machines had to be brought in, reinforcement had to be brought in just to count the crores and crores and crores. Somebody asked me then, so I said, in the land of Saraswati, Saraswati was demeaned, and so was Lakshmi. Money was just thrown. They had so much money, they didn't know what to do. Look at those piles. They were in bundles which were half opened and thrown. Why am I giving these examples? This is when you do ati. Ati of anything results in this. You mentioned one of the, when I say one, because you mentioned just one lady's name. There was another lady who was stationed in Bangladesh to receive the money there. Obviously, she's not come in limelight, so we don't talk about her. This is the extent of the rot. This is the extent of the rot. Now, where we are. Look, Trinamool Congress says, oh, but we have dismissed him. We have removed him. So, have you done anything to bring him to justice? No. Your justice is I have removed him. See, Bengal was the leading light of education in our country. I remember a student coming from Bombay University to Calcutta University had to lose 1 year. Yes, had to lose 1 year because our standards were there. I won't talk of the current standards. It actually makes me feel sad because I have seen in my life, as a student, I have seen somebody coming from Bombay in my family had to lose 1 year. So I'm not giving just a theoretical example. So again, these things. Today, it looks like how will it end? It will all end today. If you look at education throughout the country, the new the education policy of the country, National Education Policy, NEP. NEP has brought about a path-breaking change. Skilling. By far more important than graduate certificate is skilling. I give you an example. We have huge number of educated unemployed. A lot of them are unemployable. Tell me, if you have a leaking pipe in your home, How much time you spend to get a plumber? Because we don't have skilling. We run after graduate degrees and postgraduate degrees. This is where Modi ji has brought about a huge dimensional change. Emphasis on skilling. Skilling is what will get us jobs. Skilling is what will solve the country's problem. I give you one country's example, which after being devastated in the Second War, went to the top, Germany, on skilling. Not on certificate, on not on graduate certificates, on practical education. So, let me put it this way. As Swamiji said, our thoughts of yesterday have made our today. It's our thoughts of today which will make our tomorrow. Think positive. Look for the future. And arise at this thought. Awake. Stop not till your goal is reached.
Absolutely. Beautifully put, Ashishirji. I think it has been a very comprehensive discussion and amazing insights, perspectives, anecdotes that you have put forth. I think we are at a very pivotal point in history as we are moving along towards the general election of 2024, when we have to look at this rather important kind of cornerstone, this pillar of the Bharatiya Sabhyata, of the Bharatiya Rashtra, and how to kind of bring it from this politics of resentment and the politics of dejection, so to say, towards what you just put forth, which is a politics of universalism and positivity, which is rather very important going forward. If you would like to kind of share some parting thoughts with our viewers, Shishirji.
All that I would say, 2047, physically I may not be there. Bharat will be Viksit. Bharat will not just be the third economy in the world. We'll be third economy very soon. From 11 to 5, we'll be third very soon. We will be the third strength, the pillar, the pole. That is my strength of conviction in the way Bharat is going. And by the way, as a Bengali, Bengal will also be there. That will sound political, I'll stay away from that. Or if you permit me, I'll say.
Please go ahead, Shishirji.
In the words of Atalji, Andhera chhatega, Suraj ugega, Kamal khilega.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Shishirji. This was an amazing discussion with one of the most prominent industrial and political leaders of West Bengal today. And I look forward to this journey being taken forward by himself as well as other nationalistic forces in the state of West Bengal at this very critical time. Thank you, Shishirji, for joining us today. And
Namaskar.
Namaskar.